Hello and welcome to the Packaging Europe podcast, which I'm excited to say will be coming to you more frequently this year, giving us a chance to explore in depth lots more of the big stories and talking points around innovation and the future of packaging. I'm Tim Sykes, and for today's podcast, I'm delighted to welcome back an old friend, Global Packaging Director at Mintel and self-confessed packaging geek, the one and only David Luttenberger. Hi, David.
Hey, Tim. Nice to talk to you again today, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about package innovation with you again.
And how's your year started? We're still just about in January.
It's going well so far. I'm seeing a couple things. I think the marketplace is opening up, at least by what we see with Mintel clients in terms of them wanting us to get back out in person in front of them. The idea of industry gathering at industry events is ticking up again. So it's encouraging. You know, things are kind of looking up for face-to-face human contact again this year.
It's, dare we say that we're starting to get into the post-COVID era. Let's hope so.
Certainly hope.
Yeah. So we're here today to talk about our shared passion, packaging innovation, in the particular context of two global packaging competitions, which both of us have been heavily involved with, namely Packaging Innovation Awards, which is organized by Dow, and the Sustainability Awards, organized by us, Packaging Europe. David, for several years, has been the lead judge for the former, and I've had the honor of being a jury member of the Packaging Innovation Awards for the last few editions. And I'm the organizer of the latter, the Sustainability Awards, and as such, I have to keep my mouth shut when the judging goes on, which is very frustrating. And David has done us the honor of participating in the jury of the Sustainability Awards for several years. And we're both passionate advocates of both of these competitions. So I think I can speak for both David and myself in saying that we have no shame in plugging these to our listeners, and also the fact that both competitions are open right now for submissions. So if you're doing any important work in packaging innovation, I'm inviting you to press the pause button on this podcast right now. Go away and enter your project to both the Packaging Innovation Awards and the Sustainability Awards, and obviously come back and listen to the rest of the conversation afterwards. But more importantly, I'd like to use this opportunity to talk about what we've learned from these two initiatives and what are the submissions we've seen and the verdicts of the respective juries, what that has taught us about the state of global innovation in today's industry. Before we go on into all of that, David, let me ask you a provocative question. Do you think these competitions are important, or are they really something that's quite nice for the winners and fun for people like you and me who get to feast ourselves on packaging innovation?
Well, of course, they're fun for us packaging geeks, but I mean, really, I think these competitions are paramount to the continued evolution, revolution of package innovation, because yes, it's great when, you know, a particular supplier or brand owner or entrepreneur can say, hey, I've won this award. I've won this Sustainable Packaging Award. I've won this Dow Award. But I think more than that, it shows the greater packaging industry at large that package innovation is important, and the sharing of that innovation and the details behind it. You know, why was it developed? What solution does it bring to a end use experience, whether that end use is in a hospital, you know, in a factory, at a consumer's home, in the store? I just think it brings different things to light that then spurs further innovation among those who are, you know, passionate like you and I are about the development of innovation, but also those who use these package innovations. You know, where are they being applied and how can we use them to make consumers' lives, you know, gosh, what I always say, easier, faster, better, more convenient, safer, you know, all the things that we look to packaging to provide for us in our lives. So yeah, it's great for the winners, but I think it's just outstanding for the industry to see who is doing what and how we can build on, you know, what's happened in the past, what's been developed and commercialized in the past, and use these learnings to continue that evolution, and in some cases, the revolution of the development and application of innovation.
Yeah, indeed. One thing I've noticed from sitting in the Packaging Innovation Awards jury for several years is that there are things that a few years ago we thought, wow, this changes everything.
And then
2 years later, we see similar things and we're thinking, right, this is already old news. But in a way, that kind of disappointment, oh, we've already seen this, is an example of what you've just talked about, isn't it? That innovation spreads really quickly and becomes the norm, and it can be quite humbling to see how quickly the new things become the standard, and how quickly the industry can progress in that way.
Yeah, we always say things move rather slowly in the business and industry of packaging. But as you mentioned, just a couple years ago, if something had 30% recycled content, we were like, wow, this is an award winner. Look at this. And then last year, we're like, yeah, okay. You know, but that doesn't mean that it's not important, because as we see how, I hate to use the term easy, but how we can use recycled content in packaging, it sort of takes the mystery and the complexity out of it for those fast followers to say, okay, this megacorp did it, or this entrepreneur did it, which shows on both ends of that scale that it can be done. So while it may be, you know, sort of incremental, or been there, done that, seen that, still really important that we continue to see others pick up on what's been done and quickly, you know, follow the lead, so we can get the greater industry to a certain benchmark or a certain level. And then we can make that next, you know, incremental step, you know, going forward. So it's, yeah. I hate to say that incremental is not important, because incremental advancements are very important. You know, we didn't get from the Wright brothers to the, you know, in 10 years. It took, you know, incremental evolutions in lift, thrust, you know, propeller technology, jet engine technology. You know, it moves in the big context quickly, but those details, you know, oftentimes move rather slowly. And when we can share these innovations, that's going to get us to the point where we want to be that much quicker.
Yeah, indeed. And then sometimes we can recognize that something doesn't have value. And I think that's also a very important part of the job, to not reward things, you know, to identify something as greenwashing or not providing value. And that's also part of that function as a barometer for the industry. So as I said, let's maybe pick out some of the key innovations that we've seen in the most recent editions of the two competitions, and maybe discuss our own reflections of them, and also the broader significance they have in terms of trends that we see across the industry. One thing I would immediately remark on is that in the 2023 edition of the Sustainability Awards, we saw even more growth in a trend that we'd seen for a while, namely migration from plastic to paper. What I think in the States you call fiberization as a trend, right. And you know, the extension of functionality of fiber-based packaging. And I think that's something I expect to see continuing in this year's editions. And I guess there's no better example of this to start our discussion than the P&G EcoClick box for laundry capsules, which was the overall winner, the diamond winner of the Packaging Innovation Awards, and also scooped its category trophy for the Sustainability Awards in 2023. Talk to me about that one.
I think that's a really good point that we start, you know, at the very top there. Because, as you said, the paperization, the fiberization, as we look to alternative materials, I think it's important to look at such base materials as paper. But I think it's also important to note that with the Sustainability Awards and the Dow Packaging Awards, although the focus of the Sustainability Awards is sustainability, environmental responsibility, that where the Dow Awards are focused on not only sustainability, but technology and user experience, that we found common ground there. And that this EcoClick box from P&G, yes, it's, you know, it's much better for the environment, but structurally, it's very different than anything we've seen in the industry. It certainly speaks to the idea of ease of consumer experience, ease of consumer use, you know, with that audible click lock sound, because that speaks to the idea of child safety. But it's packaging such as the EcoClick box that resonate not just in one competition or another, not just in one category, but we can look at that structure and how it was developed and what issues and problems that it solved. And we could use that as a technology transfer opportunity into many other categories, into food, into medical, into, you know, over-the-counter pharmaceuticals, those sorts of things. So I think the idea of such a revolutionary package not only stands on its own merits in its own category, but really sets the stage, you know, for people to start thinking differently. Well, this, you know, how can I use this in my category? How would it solve a similar, you know, consumer challenge in another? And again, why does it, you know, speak to that environmental responsibility that made it such a big splash in the sustainability award? So it just hit on so many different cylinders. No matter the core focus of a packaging competition, it really spoke to the broader ideas of environment, consumer issues, you know, just so many different things, use experience. So, you know, it was an obvious winner in both. And I think it probably earned some awards in other competitions as well.
I think that's true. Yes. Yeah. And you brought out quite an important distinction between the Sustainability Awards and the Packaging Innovation Awards, in that the Sustainability Awards, in the title, you know what the singular focus is. Whereas the Packaging Innovation Awards are looking to, well, at least to win the top prize, the diamond winner, it needs to tick boxes as innovation, sustainability, and consumer experience. And I thought, yeah, the EcoClick box was lovely in its execution and that kind of audible and tangible experience that you get from packaging, which is quite a special thing.
And I think that speaks to the importance right now in the industry. And I don't particularly like the word sustainability, as you know. I prefer environmental responsibility. But it speaks to the importance of sustainability, of environmental responsibility in the overall picture, really, of any technology today. It's something that has become, you know, those table stakes. It's where it may, even if it's something for a hospital use, are we using less material? Are we using a material that can be composted? You know, how are we applying adhesives in a way that it can be recycled? Those sorts of things. So that the idea of packaging sustainability, I think, is something that we see, gosh, in almost every package innovation today, and not just those that are award winners, but it's just become something that is part of the DNA of package manufacturers, the DNA of brands, of retailers. There has to be some element of the greater good for, you know, for the planet, the economics for the consumers, and pretty much every package that we develop today.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So another trend that I think is hugely important to the industry and the innovation landscape, and which you touched on just now, David, on your comments around incremental changes, circularity in plastics. And I very much agree with what you said in that those incremental advances are incredibly important, you know, extending the capabilities and applications of monopolymers and adding recycled content, you know, adding another 5% in a particular application. It's hugely important. And at the same time, because the breakthrough innovations that have allowed some of these things to happen took place a few years ago, they're maybe not being recognized quite so consistently in the awards winners as they were. But I think that's something that we certainly want to see continuing to be reflected in the innovation landscape. Yeah. One comment I would make there is that there's a lot of important innovation happening outside the packaging itself, and particularly in areas like the sorting and recycling technologies.
Yes.
So for absolutely. Example, Holy Grail and the Digital Watermarking Consortium, I think is one of the most important things that I've seen in the innovation space in recent years. And obviously that's primarily talking about the data infrastructure behind a fairly simple marking technology.
And I think there's something to be said for that incremental advancement there as well, because if you remember a couple of years ago, these Dow Awards gave an award to the Sustainable Packaging Coalition's How to Recycle label.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily exactly as you said, it's not always about a specific technology, but it's about the infrastructure behind the technologies. And I think that's really important. The digital watermark, we've begun to see, you know, chemical recycling. And something that I'm really excited about, and maybe I'll jump ahead, you know, in our sort of ad hoc questions here, but I'm really interested this year in both competitions to see how artificial intelligence is being integrated into the business technologies, infrastructures of packaging, and how we can use it to further what we've already done. We've already begun to see AI in package design. We've already begun to see AI in helping to sort recyclables better, to make better use of what we might have pulled out of the recycling system before. So that's something that I think, you know, as you specifically said there, you know, let's just move beyond, you know, materials, containers, components, and look at these other things. So I think any part of the process, any part of the system, but again, whether it's active, intelligent, or specifically artificial intelligence this year, I'm really looking forward to see what, you know, comes into both our competitions.
Mm, yeah, indeed. In fact, you kind of read my mind there, David, because when I was talking about Holy Grail, I was also thinking about the overall winner of the Sustainability Awards in 2023, which was not a packaging company at all.
No,
AMP, right. Vortex.
And robotics.
And specifically, AI-powered automation system for film removal and recovery and the application in, you know, recycling facilities. So that jury, for one, recognized the technology that's potentially very significant for identifying and sorting flexible packaging and, you know, reducing waste, improving the purity and value of PCR. That's a really important one. And I think, I agree with you. Digitization is hugely exciting.
I think it's important because, number one, it's a technology. But number two, there's economic benefits behind it as well. And as we know, anything with sustainability is going to cost more. So anywhere where we can drive efficiencies in and costs out of whatever system it is going to be something that everybody's going to take notice of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Are there any other innovations from the last editions that particularly impressed you or strike you as important because of the trends that they symbolize?
In the Sustainability Awards, you know, certainly the Best Practice Award went to Pepsi for cutting down on its carbon footprint of its multi-pack PET bottles. You know, they took that plastic label off the bottle because if it's in a multi-pack and there's some other identifying, you know, mark or shape or color, you know, you've already got it in your home. So you have those cues that remind you of the brand. They're going to spur repeat purchase consideration, those sorts of things. But the idea of looking at not just are we reducing film, not are we just, you know, having source reduction, those sorts of things, but looking at the total carbon footprint. Myself and the Mintel packaging team believe that by the end of this decade, which isn't very long from now, that carbon reduction and calculation of total carbon footprint are going to be that single metric by which packaging and all types of sustainability are going to be measured. Because, you know, you and I have seen, and you mentioned it a couple minutes ago about greenwashing. You know, I can say this package is more sustainable than, or this material is more sustainable than, but you're taking things out of context. Whereas carbon footprint, a ton of carbon is a ton of carbon anywhere in the world. So to be able to get that sort of standard, harmonized, quantifiable metric of, is this better? Is this more sustainable? Is it more environmentally responsible? I believe is going to come down to that carbon footprint. And I think this best practice from Pepsi in China is a great example of that. Last year at the Dow Awards, didn't we have an AI calculator where not only brands and manufacturers, but consumers could, you know, get an app and calculate their carbon footprint, understand what it means and how to reduce it. So, you know, I think that carbon element is going to really begin to show itself, and not just in award winners, but in the industry in general.
Yeah. I was going to bring up the Pepsi multipack from China, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From the point of view of the simplicity of how they did it, bringing, not completely sacrificing the brand power, but putting it into the logo, putting the logo into the mold rather than the yes. label, and therefore taking away some materials. And in fact, there was a very similar concept in the last Packaging Innovation Awards, I think a silver winner, which was Danone's Danacol bottle, which took the same approach of just putting something in the mold rather than in the label.
We've also seen it with laser engraving as well.
Yeah.
We had an example. So there again, we see a similar approach to removing a label, but being done in a variety of different ways. So like we say, there's more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak. There's different ways, different technologies, different approaches to get to the same or similar results, you know, so it gives manufacturers, it gives brands and retailers an opportunity to pick and choose which one works best for them, for their brand, within their economics, within the strategies that they believe are important. So I think that's important that we see different approaches to sort of get to the same end game. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. So one other trend that I would pick out from looking at last year's Sustainability Awards entries is reuse. I think that we saw a lot more interesting projects coming from that kind of concept. Some very cool innovation in particular, combining reuse and connectivity, especially things at the point of sale. And in fact, two of our winners met that description. So there was Filar, who had a solution featuring a smart fill RFID tag, which recognized different products and filled the packaging accordingly. And then it harnessed the data from that to drive rewards and optimize inventory management. And then in our Readers Award category, there was also quite a similar solution that was a collaboration between Lidl, the retailer, and Filar and Algramo.
Yep.
So I think that's one area where I'm really looking forward to seeing what we get in this year's competitions.
My thoughts on refill, I think, really come down to a regional, maybe even a hyper-regional level, where consumers in different regions of the world have different approaches to the convenience factor associated with refill. I mean, certainly we know refill is it's very important, but it's one of many options. And I think there's an element of convenience versus value versus, particularly right now, safety, although things are going touchless, you know, that sort of thing. I know here in the US, the refill options tend to focus around the water bottle that I'm going to carry around with me rather than something I take back to the store, because that convenience factor, at least for US consumers, doesn't always seem to be there the same way it might be with Europeans, where they've just kind of grown up with the idea that this is the way it should be done. It's not an inconvenience. It's something for the greater good. So why I'm always interested in refill opportunities, refill innovations, I tend to look at it personally as, you know, is it convenient for me? And is it something that's sort of ingrained in the DNA of a certain consumer in a certain region?
Yeah, indeed. And going back to your previous point, which I fully agree with about carbon footprints, I think particularly as we think about this from the point of view of competitions and judging, that it's it's often assumed that eliminating packaging, going to durables is going to be better.
Yeah.
But I'm always troubled by the lack of data around that. So the more we can have rigorous LCAs that can tell us what does this actually imply in terms of emissions would be great, because, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, there's the example of the person who drives up to the organic store in their SUV to refill a container. What's the overall impact of that change of behavior?
And that's where I think that carbon component is going to come into it. In Mintel's sustainability report, we see in the US, I think it was like 68% of consumers said they would like to see some type of on-pack labeling that shares the carbon footprint or carbon reduction, but in quantities they can understand. So not necessarily tons, but is the equivalent of, you know, taking 1,000 cars off the road of London for a month or something like that. So I think that's, you know, the idea of communicating to the consumer about what we are doing is going to be really important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you already talked about the digitization opportunity, but I wonder, is there anything else that you're looking for in this year's competitions as a judge? Anything that you really want to see packaging innovation deliver in the year ahead?
I would like to see someone come forward and say, we have eliminated foil as a barrier, and here is what we have replaced it with, and actually explain it to us. We've seen countless entries, technologies where they say, well, we're using a water-based coating or we're using something else, but they haven't given us the specs on it. Okay. So specifically, you know, without divulging, you know, proprietary, you know, intellectual property, but giving us a little something more to go on. Yes, we've eliminated foil and here's what the coating is, and it's going to extend shelf life, or is equivalent in shelf life and barrier to oxygen and moisture, those sorts of things, you know, and put it in some real quantifiable terms that we can understand, rather than just being very general. And I understand the generalities for intellectual property, proprietary technologies, but I think we are at the point where everyone wants to know, you know, and I'll go back to like what Unilever does so often, is they develop technologies on an open innovation platform and they make it available to everyone because they see the benefit to the industry. If I can use it, you know, in beauty and personal care, perhaps I can use it in, you know, spray coatings for cooking, those sorts of things. So I'm really looking forward to see who's going to step up and actually share data on alternative coatings.
That's a very concrete answer to my question. And I had a much, much more abstract thought.
Well, I'm interested. Okay.
In answering the same question. And I was just thinking that I'm really interested in how innovation can drive impact and how we can join the dots between small pockets of innovation to do that. So for example, taking the what we've just talked about on reuse, there's a lot of really cool innovations going on there, but there aren't a lot of applications that go beyond the pilot scale at the moment.
Right. Oh yeah.
And I would really like to see some examples of, you know, major brands driving the use of reuse in at a big scale, or maybe even, you know, several global brands working together on a common platform, which starts to normalize the behavior, make it easier, and, you know, deliver the environmental gains because of the economy of scale that you get from that.
Let me ask you this though, Tim. I totally agree with you. I'd like to see that on mass scale, but we previously talked about everything we do in sustainability, environmental responsibility costs more. And are we at that point where social equity no longer pays the bills and that we are looking for an economic return? We've not talked much at all about the return on investment for sustainability, other than, as I said before, it's become that table stakes, that benchmark. It's something that I'm not going to be rewarded for as a brand, but I'm going to be penalized for if I don't do it. And I think we, I don't know if we're at the tipping point yet, but I think we're getting close to brands saying, you know what, I've spent millions and millions of dollars on this, and I've not increased my market share to the point where I would with some other type of, you know, I'll call it old school or old economy technology. So what do you think? I mean, are we close to that point where brands are saying, I've got to see some kind of financial return, not just that social equity return?
I think there's always a tension between, you know, within a brand owner, between the sustainability guys and the, you know, the business pressures.
Yeah.
And I guess I tend to engage more with the former, and those people are, you know, passionate about delivering on carbon footprints, you know, reduction of packaging pollution, etc. And you know, I guess they're cautious about what they can say about the internal pressures that sometimes act as barriers. But I would say that that particularly in Europe, but I think kind of extending through things like the UN Global Treaty, EPR is something that is, and generally, you know, the regulatory landscape is something that is growing more in the foreground, pushing, you know, there's a stick as well as a carrot, and there's increasingly a framework which incentivizes and punishes. So I'm inclined to be more optimistic than pessimistic in answer to your question.
I'll share somewhat cryptically that there was an award winner at the 2023 Dow Awards, a brand, mega global brand that I visited on site, and they introduced me to their director of sustainability finance. And I'm like, really? And I said, what's your role? He says, I look at everything that we do that could remotely be categorized as being done in terms of sustainability, even if it's repaving the parking lot with a porous material for rainwater collection. If it's, what do we spend on, you know, our pet? What do we spend on licensing for TerraCycle or how to recycle, those sort of things. But everything we do that can in some way be pinned back to a sustainability effort, he says, that's what I track. Because we are at the point where we need to know what we are spending, not only in terms of money, but in terms of time and resources, and when or if we are going to see some type of return on it. And I don't know that it was an either or, either we see a return or we're going to stop, as much as it was, they really want to get a handle on how much time, effort, you know, human, physical, economic resources they're spending on it, because, you know, it's not free by any stretch of the imagination, and it's not going away. So I think that economic return is beginning to creep into the conversation, but I don't know that it's changing the strategies yet, but I can kind of see that coming in some places. So just something to throw out there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess my first response to that is that brands also need to be very conscious of the short-term versus longer-term implications of decisions they make. And we've seen a lot of examples of taking a lot of heat from making decisions which were perfectly justified from a, you know, short-term business point of view over the last few years, and then have, you know, caused huge levels of blowback from consumers and regulators and media in terms of the environmental consequences. So,
That blowback by the media is a good point. I'll go back to something that we were talking about earlier. Here in the States, I live in the state of New Jersey on the East Coast. I live in a very southern part of the state. But last year, New Jersey enacted a plastic bag ban. So when we talk about legislation and, you know, what we are doing, you know, with packaging, a report came out just a few days ago that looked at the impact on carbon footprint of that plastic retail bag ban. And what they have determined is that plastic bags versus non-woven polypropylene reusable bags have an overall carbon footprint 500 times greater than the plastic retail bag. So I think we need to look at those sorts of things. And that's where technologies and how we communicate with consumers and how packaging is being legislated, packaging laws are being legislated. We need to dig more into the science and not just bend to misinformed consumer opinion that then turns into pressure on legislators because they want to get reelected and they do what looks good, but from a science-based perspective, could be actually, you know, very, very, you know, worse in the big picture. So I think the idea of legislation, of carbon, of consumer education, that all kind of plays into how much are we going to spend on this? Are we going to spend our money in lobbying as an industry? Are we going to spend our money on a proprietary technology? Are we going to spend our money on refills or recycled content? You know, where does it end? And yes, we believe we have to do the right thing, but, you know, we are in business to make a profit. So, yeah. You know, we have to keep the sustainability piece, you know, in check with the economic and business strategies as well. And I think that's going to be a fine line. And to, again, go back to what you asked me earlier, I think I'm looking for the next couple of years in both our competitions at innovations that address not only greater good from an environmental perspective, but also look at the consumer convenience as well as the economics behind it.
Indeed. Yeah. In our Sustainable Packaging Summit last November, we had the Chief Sustainability Officer from Procter & Gamble, Virginie Helias, and she talked about the importance of making that sustainable packaging choice irresistible to the consumer. And I think that comes back to your point that it needs to be something that people are going to buy, and, you know, it's going to be slightly more expensive if it's advancing the technology. So it needs to work in the marketplace, doesn't it?
Interesting choice of terms, irresistible. I like that, but you and I both know that for past 20 years, how many surveys have we seen that said a consumer will pay X amount more for, you know, a package that's environmentally responsible or sustainable. And we know right now, particularly when value is so important to consumers, that gap between purchase intent and purchase action, specifically around any element of sustainability, is really not going to drive purchasing behavior all that much. And again, as I said, it's kind of the expectation. Well, I expect it to be recyclable. I expect it to include 50% recycled content. I expect it to be a refill option. So it'd be really interesting to see what that irresistible component is that's going to actually, and I'll say it for the first time in history, be a sustainability element that truly drives and motivates purchasing decision. Like that irresistible, yeah.
Well, I can tell you, and we're kind of coming full circle here, sure, that Virginie Helias had the EcoClick box in her hand when she talked about that. So, and both competitions validated that idea that it's you know, environmentally responsible and it's something that ought to work well in the marketplace.
And that's a great example, because that would work well in a marketplace, whether it's at, you know, brick and mortar retail, whether it's e-commerce. So there is an economy of scale there for P&G with that box. And I think the element that drives it more than anything is that it fits well on the shelf. It's easy to open. It's got that safety element of the audible click feature. And by the way, it's made of paperboard. So, you know, was the sustainability element the thing that was irresistible, or was it the convenience, the value, the safety, the expectation? So, I mean, you and I, or maybe just me, I'll speak for me. I set a pretty high bar for these sort of things because, you know, I've been in the industry 30 years, and I hate to say it, but I've become such a skeptic about sustainability because you see so many claims. Well, we're the first to do this in Bolivia in this subcategory. They have to go to such an extreme to make a point where, why can't you just say, well, we expected you, or we know you expect us to make it out of a material that's more responsible, and we expect that it has some safety element, and we expect that it's convenient to use. So it's, I think the bar, as I said before, for award-winning innovation is becoming higher and higher, but at the same time, the opportunity for anyone to incorporate some element of sustainability is just as important.
That's a great way to sum up our conversation, I think, David. So let's just move to the final call to action that we want to put out to our audience here. As we said, we want to encourage all of you, if you're involved in packaging innovation and sustainability initiatives, to engage with both the Sustainability Awards and the Packaging Innovation Awards. And as I said at the beginning, entries are open now for both of those competitions. Yeah. So what can we tell you? What do you need to know about it, audience? Well, first of all, both competitions are free to enter. There's no real barrier to entry. And both of them are rigorously judged by an independent expert jury. There's some differences between them as well in focus. So, David, maybe you can summarize in a few sentences the Packaging Innovation Awards, because that's something that you've been embedded in for such a long time.
Yeah. The Packaging Innovation Awards really focus on three key areas, and that is technology advancement, user experience, and, of course, sustainability. That does not mean an entry has to check the box or tick the box on all three of those categories. But, those are the top overriding criteria that we look for. How does it, advance the industry? How does it solve a challenge for the consumer? And that expectation, how does it benefit the environment? And I'll throw in here the shameless plug. Like I said, the competition is open, and you can get the entry forms at PIA.awardsplatform.com.
Yes, and the deadline for that is March the 8th, I believe.
Yes.
And I would also emphasize about this that although it's sponsored and organized by DAO, it's not controlled by DAO in any way. The competition is material agnostic, so it's open to any kind of packaging. And as we just said, the big winner last time was a paper.
A great point, Tim. Yeah, solution. The DAO Package Awards, although it is hosted and organized by DAO, there is no one from DAO who is involved in the judging process at all. You do not have to use a DAO material to enter. So it's industry professionals like myself and Tim that are the jurors, and the winning entries are reviewed and awarded based on professionals like Tim and I. Nobody from DAO has any input to the winning entries. Great point. Yeah. Thank you.
And I'd also mention that the judging events, we are brought together to judge in person.
Yes.
And they're the most rigorous, exhausting conversations I've had in my life. They're
fun.
I learn so much from them. You will, if you enter the Packaging Innovation Awards, you can rely on the fact that there will be some very serious scrutiny from some people who know a lot about packaging.
Yeah, the DAO Awards and your Sustainability Awards. I mean, we draw industry professionals from every region of the world, every discipline, every end-use category, every position in the supply chain. And the people who sit down to have these discussions, they really dig into these. They give every entry the fullest consideration possible. I think we have 20 jurors this year across those disciplines, across those regions gathering. And Tim, in the Sustainability Awards, you probably have 45 jurors. I mean, maybe
it's,
even more.
It's over 50, yeah. And one of the differences is the Sustainability Awards is judged virtually rather than bringing everyone into one location, which reflects the minor difference in budget between DAO and Packaging Europe. But
but yeah. Process, because I'm involved in both. The process is no less rigorous.
I'm glad, you think so.
Yeah, no less rigorous being virtual than it would be on site. So
yes, and I'd say the other difference is that the Sustainability Awards is kind of focusing on the whole value chain.
Yes,
it's a little bit less focused on purely packaging innovation. So you can enter a machinery solution. You can enter pre-commercialized for certain categories.
I like that. I like that pre-commercial opportunity, because that gives the opportunity for someone who may have that better mousetrap to get it out there, to get it noticed, and to make it available to, you know, for the betterment of the industry. So I love that pre-commercial aspect of the Sustainability Awards.
Yeah. So essentially, there's a lot of categories where you should be entering both of them. It's a packaging innovation, material innovation that has something to do with sustainability, then absolutely apply to both. If it's a packaging innovation that is not so sustainability focused, then the Packaging Innovation Awards is for you. And if it's pre-commercialized innovation for sustainability, or if it's a kind of broader sustainability initiative, then the Sustainability Awards is also right for you. So finally, just to repeat what David said, the Packaging Innovation Awards is open for submissions until 8th of March, and you can enter via pia.awardsplatform.com. And the Sustainability Awards is open for submissions now and until 15th of March, March 15th. And you can get the information on the Packaging Europe website, how to enter that one.
Right.
Winners of the Packaging Innovation Awards, I believe, will be announced at Tokyo Pack at the end of October this year. And Sustainability Awards winners will be revealed at the Sustainable Packaging Summit on 12th and 13th of November in Amsterdam. So, please do engage, everyone. We're really looking forward to looking at all of the entries that come through. And again, maybe we'll be reconvening towards the end of the year, David and myself, to review what we saw and what it told us about innovation in 2024.
Sounds great. And I appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation with you, Tim, as always.
It's always a pleasure, David. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us and raise some really, really interesting points about the world of packaging that we live in. So we'll be back again with another podcast too. And thanks to the audience for listening. Until then, goodbye.